In this episode of Startups of the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about building an MVP as a non-developer, gaining traction with stair-stepping, and answer more listener questions. This is Startups of the Rest of Us, episode 366. Welcome to Startups of the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So Mike, I have a question for you before we start the episode here. What is the lamest and or most embarrassing domain name that you have ever purchased?
Lamest or most embarrassing. I don't think of any that I got that were embarrassing. I'd say probably the lamest was .NET forum software, I think it was.
So it was like .dotnet.
Yep.
forumsoftware.com.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't remember offhand, but I had some that were when exact match was such a big deal and the dashed exact match was not as good, but almost as good. I had some horrendous like 5 and 6 word dashed.nets, you know? So it's like business dash credit dash cards. .net or something like that. And it was when I was hacking a lot of SEO stuff and just trying to figure out how to rank stuff. And most of those were, you know, wound up being AdWords sites, or I'm sorry, AdSense sites that made back their initial investment and then not much more because Google updates came along. But yeah, I think there's probably some pretty embarrassing names in the Boulevard of Broken Dreams there.
Yeah, I can definitely think of a bunch that I don't remember whether I registered them or not, but they were kind of non-starters just because they were either hard to pronounce or going to be very difficult for people to hear it and then, you know, associate a domain name with it. It was just, they were just bad ideas. Like, I think one of them was bitclinic.com or something like that. I don't think I ever registered that one, but there's a whole list of them that I came up with that were just like, you know, they're just disqualified for a number of different reasons.
Right. And, you know, especially once you start hosting a podcast or doing public speaking or going on interviews, you realize how important the pronunciation and the ability to spell something in one way, you know, that there's not ambiguity over which version, you know, if you're using a homophone or whatever, which version of a word that you're using.
Yeah. God forbid you register Penn Island and try to sell pens. Because that's just not going to work out.
Penn Island is, did you do that?
No, I didn't. But I remember reading about somebody who did.
Got it. Cool. What's going on with you and Blue Tick this week?
Well, I'm still working on that code refactoring that I started on last week or was working on last week, and it's just turned into a nightmare. I was going through a bunch of changes and I made them, and then a lot of my unit tests failed, and then I had to start digging to figure out why, and I realized that there's some like architecture changes that need to be made. So there's code refactoring, and I'm like, oh, this is way more complicated and way more involved than I thought it would be. And a lot of it's because there's stuff that's buried in the code that I learned it all like a while back and then kind of left it out of my brain for a while and have just kind of brain dumped it and I've forgotten most of it. So now I've had to go back and like research some of the stuff, say, okay, how does this actually work again? And because it's, like I said, it's got to be kind of refactored and re-architected. So it just makes it difficult.
Yeah. And this is to give yourself multi-user capabilities. Is that right? So folks can have multiple logins and pay per seat.
Yep. Yep.
Cool. And this sounds like something that's pretty important, especially based on our conversation last week. You know, this is nice expansion revenue to get from folks who are using it. And you've had this request a lot along the way. And I know that you've avoided building it because you knew there was going to be some complexity around re-architecting things.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be so bad, except that like a lot of the services layer is like all hard coded for the user account. So I've gotten most of the, like all the database changes and stuff are in place. And then the services layer is all really tied to either the user or the account at this point. So that's still reasonably good at this point. But the problem is that the authentication mechanism on the front end, I've got to pass the account information up and down the stack, which if I could kind of separate that out and use it as like an object to pass in as opposed to like a user ID, it would make things so much simpler. And it's not that simple right now.
Yeah. And it's a bummer. It's hard to do something you know you need to do, but then it takes longer than you want it to, you know, and this is where that impatience, the founder impatience kicks in of like, I want to be moving faster, but if I rush it, I'm going to cut corners and then I'm going to regret it later. So how do you deal with that? So I know the feeling, man. This is a time to hammer it out as quickly as possible. Drink a lot of caffeine, listen to some death metal, stay up for 24 hours.
I actually forget when it was earlier this week, but I was looking at the stuff that I had to do and I'm like, man, I really should be switching over to like doing the marketing stuff. And I was like, I know if I do that, then I'm basically leaving this half done and it's going to take me longer to get back through it. And as you said, it's got to be done right the first time. So I figured I'd just plow through and made the conscious decision to just continue on it.
All right. And from my end, since I'm hopping on a plane tomorrow, don't have many updates this week. Kind of been wrapping up some loose ends and I'm actually talking about hiring plans for next year. I'm just kind of looking, you know, it's November now and it's kind of starting to be time to look ahead and project growth, both revenue and usage growth and stay out ahead of scaling. And so we're looking at what hiring is going to need to be required in order to do that. So that's been kind of an interesting exercise and one that I have not done so thoroughly in the past. Our growth has never been this fast, you know, now that we're in this venture funded engine. And so I have to be a little more deliberate about it because if we wait until we have issues, like if I wait until we're understaffed or if we wait until we start seeing performance problems, then it's too late because it takes months to fix these. So we're trying to think 3, 4, 5 months out right now. So that's been, I wouldn't say fun because I don't particularly enjoy it, but it has been enlightening and I think a necessity if I want to feel relaxed and chill and I'm having a good time next year. So other than that, we have a lot of 5-star iTunes reviews. We have 550 reviews in worldwide iTunes repo. Most recent one was on October 9th. It says tons of practical tips and lessons. It's from Hani Mura in Canada. And he says, I've been listening for about 4 years now, and I love what Rob and Mike share each week. I'm hooked. I've been following Rob's stair-step approach since launching several premium WordPress plugins, first in a few months back launching my first SaaS. Thanks for all you do. And he's with repurpose.io. So if you haven't left us a review, you don't even need to leave a full comment. We do appreciate it. But just going in to iTunes or Stitcher or Downcast or Overcast or whatever you use to catch your podcast as it may be, hopping in there and hitting the 5-star rating would do us a great favor. And today we're going to be answering some listener questions. It's funny, there's a whole theme going on. A lot of it is, it's kind of like, I've launched, now what? Is kind of the theme of today. Maybe not every single one, but there's 3 or 4 here that are kind of asking guidance like post-launch. So our first question is from Jan Ustlund. And he says, hi, Rob and Mike. Thanks for the great show. Like everyone else, I have to praise your excellent work with the podcast. I feel I have a classical developer problem. I am a solution looking for a problem. I started with web development, and then I continued into iOS, Android, and Mac development. I like the stair-step approach, and I've been launching single products targeted towards web developers like myself, more specific to the niche of Laravel developers. And he has a link here. It's eastwest.se/apps. So far, I'm selling a couple of licenses per week, but it's nowhere close to paying my bills. I've got a great response from the Laravel community and customers, but I feel I have to make a move. There are expectations that Mac apps should be cheaper than a WordPress plugin, and most of my customers who are developers seem to dislike monthly subscriptions. I have a lot of ideas for new products, but all of them are centered around Mac OS, which I'm passionate about, where it feels a lot harder to justify recurring subscriptions. Without knowing all the details, what advice would you give? And he lays out some options. I didn't necessarily have to stick to these options, but I'll lay them out here. Number one, continue with one-time products and learn more about marketing. Number two, this is not the right place to be, and I should try to come up with another product and then find product market fit. Eventually, the right idea will come up. Number three, bite the apple and try to introduce annual plans in my Mac apps with the risk of making customers angry. To me, all the possibilities are a bit paralyzing. How do I know which is the right one to go for? Again, thanks for the great podcast. What do you think, sir?
Well, kind of looking over at the website, one thing that I've noticed is that the apps themselves seem like they're a little bit all over the place. So there's this thing called FBAR, which is for managing Laravel Forge servers. Another one is Git FTP Deploy, which is for FTP deployment. And then there's like a radio player, and then Plugs of the World, which your guide to sockets and plugs for iOS. Like these different apps or utilities are kind of all over the map in terms of what types of problems they solve. So it makes it difficult to do the marketing for them because there's no overlap between them. I think I might go down the road of looking to see if you could just sell off a couple of these outright to somebody else and have them take them over and then kind of focus the efforts on building like a small suite or a tool set of different things that you could sell individually and then have like a bundle option. So if you really are getting a lot of interest from the Laravel community, then that's a great option in terms of being able to raise like your lifetime value for those customers, because then that bundle option is going to give people the ability to pay you more. And they'll feel like they're getting a deal on it because individually these products might cost $100, but if you give it to them for like $70 or something like that, then it's a better deal for them.
I want to jump in here. And what I've noticed in looking through his list of apps is the top two, one is, like you said, the Laravel Forge server, and the other one is Git FTP Deploy. Those two he charges for. And if you click through, one is $15 and the other is $20. Everything below that, which is the radio player and a timer and Crush Cockroach, is like a game. It doesn't appear that he charges for those. Maybe when you click through into iOS, they're a dollar or two. But I mean, these are definitely really small utilities almost. One thing I would say, just for organization's sake, is on the website, on this apps page, I'd probably have a heading that says like tools for developers and then other stuff I've built. Because my guess is he's making a lot more money. He said he's only selling a couple licenses a week, right, at $15 to $20. So it's not that much money. Maybe like a low-end car payment in a month. But he's probably making the vast majority of his stuff from these top two, if he's making any, you know, from the lower ones at all. So I do think, I agree with you. I think the folks starting to focus on people who are willing to pay something. I mean, even if it's $15, $20 a month, I think that's probably a decent first step.
Yeah, I didn't get that far because I was trying to go through, and when I browse, I usually will right-click on a link and then go to the next one and right-click on it so that it opens up. I can open up things up quickly in different tabs. And the way that the website works is like if you right-click on something, it actually browses to it. There's no way to open up those links in a different tab. So I just honestly didn't even get there. It was kind of annoying to me.
That makes sense. Yeah. So I guess as I think about this, it seems like when I look at the three options he laid out of basically keep doing what you're doing and build more products or start doing totally different things, try to launch a SaaS app or something, or launch annual plans. I mean, I think it seems to me the third one is easiest to test, launching an annual plan. And even if you pushed it out for 1 or 2 weeks and everybody's angry and nobody pays it and sales plummet, you know, or do it for a month. And if it doesn't work, it's easy to undo this, right? To go back to people and give them a refund or just grant, you know, say, oh, we abandoned the annual plans and now you just get it for good, just like everyone else does. So I would be tempted to try that with one or both of the apps and realizing that you will get some complaints, but if suddenly you see more sales or you feel like you're going to make more money with that in the long term, I don't think that's a bad way to go and it's easy to test. But the real problem there is even if you test that, if you're only selling a couple licenses a week, then you're not going to see any fruit from this for another year until they come up for renewal. So really, you're not doing anything to grow your revenue in the short term. And I think one of the big issues is something that he pointed out is that utilities in the app, in any app store, they're a commodity in essence. And you really can't charge that much for them. And so they have to have wide appeal and you have to sell a lot of them in order to make any type of money at it. And so I think this is it's a tough space to be in. The other kind of drag about it that's a trip is selling through the Mac App Store means you have this instant, easy distribution, right? And that's a good thing. But the bad thing is you're really not learning much about marketing. Because you're not building a website, building an email list, you know, nurturing people, running ads, or you know, blog, doing content marketing, or whatever it is that we want to talk about, you know, marketing a product. You kind of don't have to do that. You can, but you don't have to do that if you're in these app stores. You know, and one of the benefits that I espouse in the stair-step approach is you're not just gaining revenue, and you're not just gaining confidence, you're not just gaining money. You're gaining experience doing things with these smaller products. And so even the folks I know who do like WordPress plugins and they put them in the repo and then they have an upsell to a free version, they have to learn like how to write nurture sequences and how to write good copy and how to, you know, how to build an email list. I mean, there's other things that they do that I think the app stores, while they're a good starting point and using something like, you know, I'm including ThemeForest in there, you know, anything that you post into that just kind of pays you a commission but has all the distribution. It is a nice thing to get started on the side, but to grow that to the point where it supports you is hard because the prices are low. And even if you get to the point where it supports you and you can buy out all your hours, you've really missed out learning a lot of things that someone who is, you know, slogging away building, you know, I don't know, a WordPress plugin or an add-on to Shopify or something, you know, and is doing more traditional marketing, I think we'll learn that. So I don't have necessarily a strong recommendation here, but I do feel like if you can't market these through other channels, because if you only get 1 to 2 sales a week through the Mac App Store, then it's obvious there's just not that many people searching for it in there. So do you go market it elsewhere? You know, do you, whatever it is, whatever the approaches are, you talk about it in forums or you go on podcasts or you know, whatever methods you're going to use to promote it, do you try to do those to grow sales? Or do you perhaps, you know, get into a space where there's a little more margin and you can launch products that are at least, you know, $50 or $100. Like having a lifetime value of $50 or $100 is still a pretty tough gig, but it's definitely it would be a step up from these kind of $15 and $20 sales. When you're selling something that's this cheap, distribution has to pretty much be free. You know, you really need to rank number one, or, you know, in top three in Google, or you need to rank high in an App Store or in YouTube or in Amazon or in one of these places where people just find you, because you just don't have enough money to really do any type of paid marketing. So that's definitely a challenge here. You know, one other thing you can think about, Jan, is you've built something that people want, or at least there's some sales here and there. You may want to think about doing like one of these, some of these deal a day sites where they actually they have developer deal a day sites. And I know you have to cut your prices and, you know, it wouldn't be a sustainable thing, but it could be an interesting short-term influx of cash that can, you know, kind of help you, help motivate you to build that next thing. I think if I were in your shoes, given what's going on, I don't see an easy way to kind of grow these existing products. Like, nothing jumps out at me aside from doing some of these deal things, which again is a short-term thing. So personally, without knowing all the details, I would probably start thinking about a way to launch something else that has just a higher lifetime value, you know, whether that's a one-time or a recurring thing that just has, leaves a little more money to do some of these other marketing approaches and to try your hand at them.
Yeah, a couple of other things that come to mind is try and pursue an affiliate channel of some kind. There's lots of websites out there that just have like dozens and dozens of products, or actually probably tens of thousands of products on them, where people can go through and identify what products that they want to push as an affiliate on their own site. It's hard to get noticed in those, so you'd probably want to pick and choose like different people to approach for that. So if you have a set of customers who keep running into a particular problem that your software works really well to solve, then approaching like the vendors of whatever that platform is or that application, and trying to get in the door as an affiliate and say, hey, you know, bundle this other application, whether it's your, you know, GitFTP deploy or your FBAR, like that would be a good way to get in front of those people and provide yourself with an additional channel.
Yeah, I like that idea. I think that could be worth pursuing as well. Kind of find another JV channel basically to go through. I think that's cool. So thanks for the question, Jan. I hope that was helpful. Our next question is another one from Safiya, and he had sent a question a couple weeks ago. The subject line is, we may have built a nice to have. He says, I'm a big fan of the show. I'm still binging my way through the backlog since I discovered it. Thanks for the great advice. I'd like your opinion on something. My co-founder and I, first-time founders, have been building a SaaS app for about a year part-time based on an idea that he had as a business coach. Essentially, the app recreates a process but moves it online, and it's one he's been successfully charging for offline for a number of years, and it solves the problem of lack of clarity and difficulty onboarding new employees in a flat organization. Our landing page has collected more than 500 emails. The feedback we get on blog and social media is generally super positive. People seem to be very eager to try the product. Now we have an MVP that we launched with about 10 leads as a free trial for a few weeks. And while the feedback is very positive, none of them have yet paid for the product. It's a flat rate of $99 a month per team. Some have logged a few bugs and quick win features that I've deployed in a matter of days. How would you approach this? Should we go down the list of 500 prospects and onboard another 10 leads? Should we focus our attention on the current 10 and get to the core of why they're not paying? How do we know if we have a problem solution fit? And most importantly, if there was a problem in the first place, could it be that we built a cool looking product that is just a nice to have? Am I too impatient? How long does it take to close a sale in the B2B world? So I'll let you take this first, but at the am I too impatient, it's like, yes, but we all are. I mean, you know, you can be in searching for product market fit for 6, 9, 12 months. I mean, this can take a really long time. So I would definitely give it a little more time, but why don't you weigh in on Mike on maybe what you would do next?
Yeah, welcome to the club of impatience. I don't think that ever goes away. Nothing will ever go as fast as you want it to, or as, you know, you won't scale as quickly as you like. In terms of what to do next, so if you've got a list of 500 people and you've only gone through 10 or so, I might look at those 10 a little bit and start asking those people questions. It sounds like maybe you either haven't asked them questions, or you've asked a couple people, or and maybe they didn't get back to you, but you really don't have enough information right now to go off of. What I'd be careful of is burning through that entire list of 500 and just, you know, trying to onboard all of them and getting to the point where you're not getting enough information to make a good decision about what to do next. I think one of the issues that I ran into with Bluetick was that when I was putting people onto the system at first, I didn't do a very good job of defining kind of what the success criteria was and what the next steps were for people and what the timeline was. And I feel like the timeline was probably the most important thing, and I was the worst at that. I basically said, hey, try this out and let me know when it's providing value. And at that point, then I'll start charging you. And that absolutely didn't work. And when I turned around and I decided to put a time pressure on it, that's when people made a decision. And I think part of that was due to the fact that it just took so long to get to that point where I don't want to say put my foot down, but I kind of drew that line in the sand and said, okay, either you're in or you're out. And it's very easy to just let things slide. So if you go back to these 10 and you really can't get answers from them, that's fine. Just go to the next 10. That's okay. Again, you've still got 480 more people, but set clear expectations with them about how the process is going to go, how long they're going to be able to test things for, what you're going to do if a bug comes up. And you can explicitly tell them, like, we will pause the billing, for example, for X number of days or however long it takes us to get that particular issue fixed. So if they come to you and there's a problem, push their trial out by a day or a week or whatever, if that's how long it takes you. If it's going to take you 6 months, obviously, then I would say kind of move on, because that's not going to be beneficial for you, and it's probably not a good fit for them at that point. But you can essentially iterate through probably 5 to 10 times, and you'll get through 50 to 100 of those people, and you'll find out a lot of information about what is working and what's resonating with them and what's not. Another thing I would do is when you're going through the onboarding process, don't let them do it themselves. Walk them through it. Get them onboarded, walk them through signing up with their account, get on a video call with them and watch them do it, and watch where they have problems, because that's where you're going to learn the most from. Having them tell you after the fact is just not going to be very helpful. Like, you want to watch them struggle and watch what they're doing. And that's what I did with Bluetick, was watch people sign up for it. And every time they had a problem, I wrote it down. Even if they just looked around on the screen and they weren't sure where to go next, I wrote it down, because that's a problem. Because when I'm not there to guide somebody or answer a question directly, how are they going to figure it out on their own? And if I don't see that that's a problem, or you don't see that there's a problem in that onboarding area, you're not going to be able to figure it out, especially by looking at statistics and data from Mixpanel or Kissmetrics or whatever. Those things are not going to tell you what's wrong.
That was a really good answer. Tell me honestly, did you rehearse that before this episode in front of the mirror?
No, I did not, but I've thought about that a lot.
It was a really good, you called out basically hand-holding and watching people use the app and see where they stumble. You called out digging in with the 10 current ones, not jumping ahead, and digging as much as you can into finding out why they're not paying and setting expectations properly. And then only when you're convinced that it's not going to be a fit for them, or that you can't get the answers, then go to the next 10. And then you talked about doing that 5 or 10 more times, which might take months and months. Remember, I called this the slow launch of Drip, where we got our first paying customer in June. There was early access. They weren't paying yet, but by the end of maybe June or July, I think, was our first payment. So June, and we didn't launch to our big list until November. So it took us 5 months of essentially this exact process of, I was letting people in 5 and 10 at a time, looking at where they were succeeding, where they were failing, where they were getting value, and doing that. So this is the playbook, man. And this is, I think you captured it really, really well. So I feel like Sophia, I think that's I won't just say that's what I would do, but that's what I did. And that's what Mike did. You're following the path. And I think the question of, are you too impatient, is, or the answer is yes. Yes, but we're all impatient, and so don't feel bad about it. Our next question is from Samir, and he says, I'm launched, but I'm discouraged. What are my next steps? He says, I've built DCACLab.com, DCACLab.com, for teaching electronics. I feel schools all over the world will love to use it. In fact, some schools already use it, but I still am not making enough income to leave my 9-to-5 job. I've done everything I can. I'm still pushing forward towards freedom. The most recent thing I've done is add a blog to the website so I can start adding content to get more traffic and hopefully more sales. It's very hard work, and I'm working by myself. How would you encourage me to keep going? My website, Alexa Global Ranking, is 338,000, and I feel tired, and I'm interested in hearing from you on how I can keep strong and not give up. What do you think, Mike? Should he keep strong and not give up? I guess it depends on how much progress he's made, right? It's like, if he has one paying customer and he's spent the year, then like he probably should give up maybe.
Yeah. It's hard to answer with the data that we have. I think that you have to figure out whether or not you've actually got traction. And I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but one of the things that I heard somebody talk about this on a podcast as well. I can't remember who it was, but they talked about the fact that if you launch a bunch of things, it's a lot easier to see where the outliers are as opposed to launching, let's say, three products and none of them do well. It's hard for you to see what the outlier is where things go really, really well and you recognize that. And if I remember correctly, it was somebody who had been talking to Paul Graham about that, where they just didn't know what success looked like because they didn't have a very objective opinion of it. It's just like, oh, yes, you know, get as many people as you possibly can onto the system or the platform and grow as quickly as possible. And you'll know when you're doing well and you'll know when you've got traction and some success with it. And unless you get to that point, you really don't have a good understanding of what that actually looks like. So if you don't have any of those successes, it's very difficult to be objective about your own situation. That said, I would look back at the stuff that you have done and talk to other people who have put apps out there and have gotten some level of traction or progress with it and ask them to like evaluate the different things that are in your business versus maybe theirs. Even if they're only a little bit more ahead of you, let's say that they're making $1,000 a month, they can look at their own statistics and how they got to where they're at versus the things that you're doing now and what you're getting and let you know kind of where the different problem areas are. There's not going to be a silver bullet here, but it will help point you at least in the right direction. In terms of the app itself and the direction that I would go to towards trying to get more traffic and more sales, the name itself, DCAC Lab, I get it. It's, you know,
direct current,
alternating current. I was going to say, I was going to say digital current, but yeah, that's where I almost went. But if you're not really into electronics, you're not going to really understand that. And maybe that's not necessarily the point, but the average person may not quite understand the subtleties of the differences between them. Like if you play with like home electronics kits and stuff like that, unless you're an electrical engineer or have electrical training of some kind, you really don't completely understand that. And it's not going to come to you, like if you're searching for it on the web, like DCAC, that's just not going to come up. So the SEO perspective is probably going to be a little hard. I'm not saying change it. It's just something to kind of think about. But this kind of screams to me something that you could go to Kickstarter with. So like it's something where like people in our age bracket are probably the most likely people to help fund something like this because they want to teach their kids about electronics and how alternating current works and how direct current works and how you can build like little pieces of a larger robot and experiment with those types of things. And it just seems to me like that would be a great channel to go after to try and expand not just the horizon of what the number of people that you can reach, but also to get an influx of cash. So you could do a heck of a lot more with it. There's a lot of information out there on how to do a good Kickstarter. And I'm not going to say that it's easy because I know people who've done it and have made lots and lots of money from it or brought in lots of money, but you also have to be able to deliver on it. So getting yourself to a certain point where Kickstarter really works well for you, you also have to do a lot of pre-marketing in order to essentially accelerate it and pour gas on the fire once you do get it on Kickstarter. Some other things that come to mind is you could go like the route of trying to get into like government funded channels, like directly into public education, public schools, or even private universities or private schools. But those seem to me like the channel is going to take you a heck of a lot longer in terms of the timeline to develop. And I don't know how much time you have to put into this or even how much energy you have left to do it. Because it sounds to me like you're kind of at the end of your rope.
Yeah, that's a thing. Like selling directly to schools or universities would be the money shot here in terms of the big contracts. It can make a difference, but it's like 1 to 2 year sales cycles, you know, because they budget way out and you got to convince them it works. I mean, I got to be honest, just looking at the screenshots and I just watched a little video, it's a pretty slick tool. Like it really does look like a circuit board. And I think you use it right here in a web browser. And he's got something. It's interesting here. It's just it's one of those tough markets of like individuals probably aren't going to buy it in terms of like, I wouldn't buy this for my kids because, you know, I might buy like a coding class or something, but it's only $42 a year, but I just don't know. They're not doing enough circuits right now. And you're going to just get onesie, twosie sales. So what you want to do is go after groups, right? Like schools, universities, even, you know, public, private, all that stuff. But that's just that enterprise sales cycle. And so it becomes a challenge. So I like the advice that you laid out. I think that if you have almost no traction, I mean, if you literally have a couple hundred dollars in revenue, it might be time to just walk away, sell it on Flippa. I mean, you have built something here that has some value, but it probably couldn't sell through a broker if it's that small. If you have at least, say, $25,000 a year in revenue, or maybe it may have to be profit actually, then you can approach, you know, a website or app broker. And if you really are burned out and just struggling to get a pass there, that's not a bad option. And you'll find that you'll leave that with a little bit of cash in your pocket and feeling refreshed is something I've done a number of times. So I know firsthand how that feels to kind of keep an app around longer than it should and feel guilty about it because you're not committing the time and you feel like you've invested a lot of stuff and you have this sunk cost fallacy and you want to keep building it and you don't know when to stop. And so I'm not saying that you should stop, but you do need to listen to those feelings if you feel like you've just been pushing a boulder uphill and you haven't really made any progress. I think that I kind of have a question mark in my mind of whether a blog, which is what you mentioned as the next marketing channel, is the right thing. I mean, I think if there's a lot of SEO terms, there's long tail people searching for this kind of stuff, then maybe I wouldn't do it for 6 months without some type of noticeable ROI. I might do it for a couple of months. And of course, the hard part there is you often need time to kind of build a snowball there. So yeah, and AdWords isn't going to work here. Facebook ads, probably not, given the low lifetime value. I mean, there's just, you know, there's not a ton of options aside from the places we've talked about before, which are, there could be the joint venture deals of, is there anyone anywhere who's like bundling these things together? Is there anyone who has an audience that would be interested in this? Like a blogger that you could pay a big, you know, 40% affiliate commission to get like a nice one-time hit. You know, what other free channels are there? Are there forums? Are there discussion? Is there a Stack Exchange for electronics? I'm almost sure there is. Can you become active in there? And you don't just sit there and pitch your thing, but you answer the questions because you obviously know a lot about circuits, but you answer questions and then your profile has the links in it. You know, I mean, there are ways to do this. This is not like a high growth market and it's not something that you're going to hit a hockey stick by tapping into the right thing. It is just going to be kind of a slow build. And if you're interested in it and you're still kind of wanting to push it, then do that. And if you're not, then I would think about launching your next thing because you obviously have some skills to have been able to launch this one.
You know, something else that came to mind as you were talking was, what about building a course around teaching somebody how to use electronics and then bundling like a 1 year subscription of this or 3 months or 6 months with it? And that way you're really selling the course, but this is kind of an augmentation of that course. That seems like a good idea.
Yeah, because I mean, I pay quite a bit of money for my 11-year-old does coding courses, and I buy those courses online, and then he goes through them, and he builds Minecraft mods and all that stuff. And if there is a way to make this interesting, like parents are likely to buy things for their kids. You know, I mean, that's an interesting market. It's not an enterprise sale, but it is a way, like you said, and then going down that B2C kind of Kickstarter path, you know, selling the course with this bundled as a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo or something, that may be the best idea we came up with today regarding this business in particular. All right. So thanks for the question, Samir. Hope that was helpful. Our last question for today is about bootstrapping an MVP as a non-developer. It's from Rusty Shackelford, and he says, I have an idea for a SaaS application, and I feel like I have a great in an industry that I'm familiar with. However, I'm not confident enough in my abilities as a programmer to actually code a viable product. What's the most financially viable way for me to get a demonstrable demo of a product up and running without having the personal ability to code it?
I think the first step is to take it from beyond having a great idea in an industry to talking to people and getting either commitments or actual pre-sales from the people there to give you the confidence that going into that without having a development background and being able to know that you can essentially program your way out of any technical problem that you run into is probably the place to start. Because if you can get those commitments and have that confidence that people are willing to pay for it and you're able to find enough of those people, then that's really the next step. I mean, it seems like a clear way to try and figure that out. And if you do get that confidence, especially if you have, like, let's say $20,000 in pre-sales, you can take that proof of pre-sales and go to a developer and have have a much higher chance of being able to convince, you know, your average off the street developer that, hey, let me work with this other person or partner with them, and I'll either do it for free or do it for a really low rate in exchange for equity or whatever, in order to be able to latch onto this business that clearly has some legs to it. Because what you'll run into is if you go to a developer and say, hey, I've got this great idea, I'd like you to build it for me, I can tell you what's going to happen, and they're going to say, haha, no, I don't think so. Unless they're just not any good at it, because there's too many developers who've done that too many times and they've gotten burned, and it just does not work out, because the technical side of this is not the problem. The problem is the business side and making sure that you can get in front of enough customers on a repeatable basis. And if you can prove that up front, then you can move on towards actually building the product itself. But I don't think that there's a lot that you need to do in order to even just put something in front of people who you're talking to. Like, I did balsamic mockups for Bluetick, and that was all I needed in order to get pre-sales. So I would recommend having those conversations first and then going through the process of like showing them what it might look like. And then after that, if you can get them to buy into it, then move on to actually building a prototype. Because until you get to that point where they say, yes, I'm willing to pay for it, or it's a problem that I have and I need it solved, it doesn't matter. You can build all the prototypes you want, but you could very well just be building the wrong thing.
Yep. That's the playbook. So to recap, have more conversations, have a bunch of one-on-one conversations, and you can go out and you can look in forums and you can look in wherever folks who you're trying to sell to hang out. If you have an in the industry, you already probably know a bunch of people in that industry. And so talk to them, describe the idea as much detail as you can, and say it's going to be $100 a month or whatever you think the pricing will be. What do you think? And if they say yes, then say, awesome, I'm going to go build, mockups, and I'm going to come back and show you. And if I ultimately build this product, are you willing to pay that? And then they'll say yes or no. And once you get enough people and you really have an idea of what you want to build, like Mike said, make the mockups. Balsamic's a great tool. I think some people today, it's like Sketch and Envision, but it's like, you don't need to get too fancy with this, right? And you can, then you come back to them and you say, here's what it is. Here's what it really does. They'll have questions for you. And then you make a decision, right? If you get a bunch of people ordering and you get the validation, like Mike said, you can go to a developer, or if you have savings, you can feel a little more confident that perhaps this thing will work. And maybe you go and hire a developer, which is probably a whole other podcast episode, a lot of challenges there, but you can hire someone to build it and essentially hire a co-founder. Or you could even go down a different path. And if it's a service that can be mocked up and handled by hand, like by yourself or by a virtual assistant with minimal software or maybe no software at all, like, can you mock this thing up with have a fully functional version with, Google Forms and Zapier and you copying stuff out of a spreadsheet and manually sending emails from your Gmail or through MailChimp or manually crunching data in an Excel spreadsheet instead of an app actually doing it, then maybe you don't even need a developer to get to the next step, past the mockups. The next one is, okay, now I'm going to do this for you. And I don't know what your service is, so that's where this part's hard. But it's like, if you've committed that you're going to bring 20 leads a week to lawyers or to real estate agents, it's like, yeah, you want to build software to do that ultimately. But now just get on the phone and generate the leads, run the AdWords and generate the leads. Or if you're going to do SEO analysis on something, then yes, you'll want computer to do that eventually. But for now, just do it yourself, like do it manually and develop the algorithm and send them pen and paper in essence, send them that Excel spreadsheet that is super low tech and figure out, see if they're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, I'm getting a ton of value out of this. Or if they're like, huh, yeah, the results really aren't as interesting as I thought they would be. They don't necessarily need to, in a lot of cases, need to actually use software to get the value that the software will ultimately provide. So that's kind of your either or there, depending on the idea. And if you can't do that, and that is possible in more niches than you think and more with more ideas than you think, but if that's totally not possible, then yeah, you do go down the train of kind of trying to build a prototype / MVP. And those things don't have to be the same, but in this case, they essentially would be.
So thanks for the question, Rusty. I think that about wraps us up for today. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupstherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupstherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.